Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, July 4th, 2019. The front page of today's pantograph is devoted to reprinting the Declaration of Independence, so we will begin today's reading inside the paper on page A3 with a story headlined, Chief Search Panel Named. Hefner Among Five Aiding BPD Search. By Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Former Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner is among five people who will assist City Manager Tim Gleason in selecting the city's next police chief. Hefner, now the U.S. Marshal for the Central District of Illinois, will be joined on Gleason's selection committee by Art Taylor, Chairman of the Bloomington Public Safety and Community Relations Board, PSCRB, McLean County State's Attorney Don Knapp, Deputy City Manager Billy Tias, and Bloomington Economic Development Director Melissa Hahn. Police Chief Clay Wheeler, 53, announced in April that he would retire June 21st. He said his retirement was prompted by his wife's cancer diagnosis about a month after he was appointed police chief in May 2018. He succeeded Hefner, who retired after about 5 years as police chief, to take the U.S. Marshal position. The police chief selection is mine to make as city manager, but this is a decision that is so important to the community that I've already asked the PSCRB to run the lead on community outreach, Gleason said Wednesday in announcing his selection team. But I don't want to hold this decision entirely at my level. I've reached out to a handful of people who I think will be tremendously valuable to the selection process, Gleason added. They are going to help in the interview process and the eventual selection of our next police chief. The city is conducting a national search for Wheeler's replacement. The application period will close Sunday. Gleason said more than 40 candidates from across the United States have already applied. The majority of those meet the qualifications. I am hoping to narrow the field of applicants to 6 to 10 candidates to interview 2 weeks from now, said Gleason. Those interviews likely will occur July 17th to 19th, he added. If things go well, we'll have 2 or 3 candidates emerge as the selection committee's true finalists and then do a second round of interviews if necessary. Gleason hopes to have the finalists do a meet-and-greet with the community the week of August 5th. While I am not locked into this, I envision the candidates to be able to have 3 or 5 minutes with a microphone in hand to share who they are, and then after that have each of the candidates staged in a certain location where community members or groups can talk to the candidate one-on-one, said Gleason. The candidates would each make some very brief closing comments. The selection committee would convene and identify the selected candidate. Ideally, we would have somebody in place in a permanent position by mid-September, said Gleason, but we'll sort of roll with how things progress. Bloomington Assistant Police Chiefs Greg Scott and Dan Donath are sharing the duties and title of interim chief until a replacement for Wheeler is found. I am very honored to be asked by Mr. Gleason to serve on the selection committee, and I told him we wouldn't let him down, that we would go through the selection process and find the right candidate to recommend to him, said Taylor. Taylor said he will use community feedback provided at the PSCRB's quarterly meeting last month to guide him in the selection process. I was listening to what members of the community were looking forward to, and I am going to use some of that feedback as we look at the candidates, said Taylor. Hopefully, some of the candidates will fit those bills and be able to give us what we need here in Bloomington in the way of a well-rounded police chief who will serve the community well. Here's a timely story headlined, 1776 Fresh to Early Illinoisans. Fireworks, parades, speeches marked formal celebrations. By Tom Emery. Today in Illinois, the 4th of July is a holiday for boating, barbecues, and fireworks. In the state's earliest days, the celebrations were more organized and formal, though the fireworks were a constant. The first 4th of July celebrations, after Illinois was granted statehood in 1818, as elsewhere, often were loosely scripted. First on everyone's minds was reverence for the Revolution, which had taken place less than 50 years earlier. Samuel Wheeler, state historian of Illinois and director of research and collections at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, says, "Americans of the 1820s and 1830s were closer to the Revolution than we are to World War II. They understood how significant the Revolution was and held the men and the leaders of that time in very high esteem." A typical 4th of July in the era began with the boom of a cannon or the crackling of gunfire, followed by a parade of the leaders of the town, including tradesmen, business owners, and militia members, with musical accompaniment. Then the Declaration of Independence was normally read aloud before an array of patriotic speeches was delivered. "Celebrations of the 4th of July usually followed an agenda," said Wheeler. "There was a kind of order on how things were to be done. Afterward, the men of the town gathered at a local tavern or hotel for dinner, complete with 13 formal toasts, one for each of the original colonies." The number 13 was a recurring theme in many July 4th celebrations nationwide, and some towns featured the firing of 13 guns or cannons as part of the festivities. "Today, the number 13 is considered unlucky," Wheeler said. "But in that era, everyone knew what 13 meant. That honored the colonies that had banded together and created this audacious new experiment in popular government." The toast, too, followed a script. One was for the heroes of the Revolution, another was for the sitting president, and a third was for George Washington. Even the number of cheers after each toast was planned ahead of time. The last of the 13 toasts usually was dedicated to women, who were rarely present at the dinner. "Women in the 19th century weren't going to be a part of that," said Wheeler. "Men and women lived in separate spheres in that era. But the women usually celebrated July 4th in their own way. In one instance, in the early 1840s, about 400 women in Springfield held their own outdoor celebration to mark the day." Fireworks, though, were a mainstay of Independence Day celebrations. "Fireworks or some sort of aerial display were always a feature," Wheeler said. "That really hasn't changed much in the decades since." Revolutionary veterans were cherished members of early 19th century society in Illinois and elsewhere, especially on July 4th. "Now, our greatest generation includes the veterans of World War II, but in that era, it was the revolutionary veterans," Wheeler said. "People of that time certainly appreciated what those men had done to ensure a new form of government that we continue to enjoy today." And we're told that the author of this, Emery, is a freelance writer and historical researcher from Carlinville. The story is part of the Illinois Important Dates series, sponsored by the Illinois Associated Press Media Editors and Illinois Press Association. And a sidebar tells us Illinois 4th of July facts. On July 4th, 1778, the daring takeover of Kaskaskia by George Rogers Clark secured the Illinois country for the Americans during the Revolutionary War. Ground was broken on the Illinois and Michigan Canal on July 4th, 1836. The cornerstone of the old state capitol was laid in Springfield on July 4th, 1837, paving the way for the relocation of state government from Vandalia. All state records were to be moved to Springfield by July 4th, 1839. However, the government did not actually operate in Springfield until December of that year. July 4th was first designated as a federal holiday in 1870, and it became a paid holiday for federal employees in 1941. The next story is entitled "Police Seek Suspect in Sex Abuse Case" by Pantograph Staff. Bloomington. Bloomington police are asking for the public's help in finding a suspect in a criminal sexual abuse incident. The suspect is described as a Hispanic man in his late 20s or early 30s. He has facial hair on his chin and was last seen wearing a red lanyard around his neck, possibly with a key attached. According to police, the suspect was in the area of Front and Center Streets and Front and Madison Streets in downtown Bloomington from 11:40 a.m. to 12:35 p.m. June 25th. About 12:15 p.m., the suspect allegedly committed criminal sexual abuse against a victim under the age of 17. Anyone with information on the identity of this suspect is asked to contact Detective Finelli at 309-434-2457 or sfinelli at cityblm.org. To remain anonymous, call McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. The next story is entitled, County Drug Court Earns Certification, by Pantograph Staff. Bloomington. The McLean County Drug Court has achieved certified status from the Illinois Supreme Court Problem-Solving Courts Standards. Becoming certified by the Illinois Supreme Court is something to be celebrated and is the culmination of countless hours spent by the entire McLean County Drug Court team, led by Circuit Judge Casey Costigan, with the assistance of many others, including, but not limited to, McLean County Court Services Director Cassie Taylor and her staff, said Mark Fellheimer, Chief Judge of the 11th Circuit. The program helps people with a drug addiction get help and eventually return to society. Fellheimer said the program also cuts jail costs. The program requires defendants to attend court on a regular and heavily monitored basis, undergo treatment, obtain employment, and be drug tested over a sustained period of time. The certification process took 2 years of development and paperwork review by the Special Supreme Court Advisory Committee for Justice and Mental Health Planning and by the Administrative Office of the Illinois Courts. The McLean County Drug Court has operated since 2009. McLean County's Mental Health and Veterans Courts are undergoing similar reviews. Here's a piece of Illinois news entitled, Veterinary Association Warns About Pets Ingesting Marijuana, by Jerry Nowicki. Springfield. With legalization of adult-use marijuana set to begin January 1st in Illinois, the American Veterinary Medical Association is warning residents of the dangers marijuana ingestion can cause their pets. We've seen a marked increase in any state that has legalized marijuana, where there's been a huge spike in the amount of cases of animals coming into veterinary hospitals, clearly under the effects of marijuana, said Dr. John DeJong, president of the AVMA. DeJong said THC, the psychoactive substance in marijuana, is toxic to dogs. The AVMA said an animal's ingestion of THC can cause vomiting, lack of coordination, depression, sleepiness or excitation, low blood pressure, low body temperature, and seizures. Edible products are a particular risk because they are often mixed with products such as chocolate or other complex sugars that are also poisonous to dogs. DeJong said he was not aware of any immediate deaths of animals caused by marijuana ingestion, but the toxicity of THC to dogs could cause serious damage. DeJong said the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Poison Control Center reported a 765% increase in calls about marijuana ingestion by animals as the year before. Calls to the Pet Poison Helpline soared over 400% in the past 6 years. In Colorado, veterinary visits for marijuana ingestion at two animal hospitals quadrupled from 2005 to 2010, DeJong said. During that time, the state's active medical marijuana registrations increased by more than 100%. If a pet shows signs of marijuana toxicity, rigidness, nervousness, poor balance, seizures, drooling, or dribbling urine, DeJong said a veterinarian should be contacted as quickly as possible. DeJong said smoking in the same room as a pet could be dangerous as well, although the evidence of ambient smoke affecting pets is anecdotal. The AVMA said marijuana smokers should do so away from pets, and any edibles should be kept secure and inaccessible to pets. "We're more concerned, especially with dogs, about the ingestion of marijuana," he said. The next story is entitled, "Access Restricted to Fairview Park, July 4th. Normal. Access to parts of Fairview Park will be restricted Thursday as crews set up fireworks and prepare for the annual fireworks show. "We have to maintain a safe distance from the launch site in case something goes wrong, not only during the show, but also during the day while the crews are setting up," said Normal Fire Inspector Matt Sweeney. "Fireworks are beautiful in the sky, and it is easy to forget that they are high explosives. If there is an accidental detonation on the ground, it can be catastrophic and deadly." After the Park to Park 5K run has ended, the Parks and Recreation Department will close Constitution Trail on the north and south ends of Fairview Park and also close roads leading to the west half of the park. No one will be allowed in that area from the time the fireworks arrive on site until after the firework performance. The area includes the skate park, tennis courts, and portions of Illinois State University's Wibring Golf Course. The closure will begin around noon. Barricades, tape, and banners will be posted to remind visitors. Anyone that crosses into the restricted area is subject to removal from the park and or fines, but our main goal is safety. If something goes wrong, you could be injured or killed, and we want to avoid that, Sweeney said. And here's some Independence Day news from Chicago, headlined, "Chicago boosts police presence to tamp down July 4th violence," by Don Babwin. Chicago. Chicago's police department is following a familiar playbook for the July 4th holiday by flooding the street with officers and arresting dozens of people on drugs and weapons charges in the hopes of keeping them locked up during what is typically one of the most violent weekends of the year. On Wednesday, Mayor Lori Lightfoot announced that more than 1,500 extra officers will hit the streets, parks, and lakefront. The department said uniformed and undercover officers will be assigned to the lakefront and Navy Pier during the annual fireworks show that's expected to attract hundreds of thousands of people, and they'll be working known crime hotspots in the city for the entire weekend. At a news conference Wednesday, police talked about three separate operations over the past 30 days that resulted in a total of 170 arrests on gun and narcotics charges, the seizure of 38 guns, and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of illegal drugs. They said the most recent effort, called Operation Independence, ended Tuesday with the arrests of 77 people, 34 of whom are convicted felons. The department has conducted similar operations ahead of the three warm weather holidays, Memorial Day, July 4th, and Labor Day, in previous years, and they make no secret of the timing. They try to net as many people who are disproportionately involved in violent crime, either as suspects or victim, on days when the crowds in the city's park, tourist areas, and streets are historically the largest. That's always the goal, First Deputy Superintendent Anthony Riccio said Wednesday. If we can take them out of play for that whole time, or part of that time, it's going to make those communities a safer place. Police have added 1,000 more regular officers in recent years and expanded the use of gunshot detection technology and other high-tech crime-fighting equipment, resulting in a drop in violent crime. Just this week, the department announced there were fewer homicides and shootings in the first 6 months of 2019 than during the same period in each of the previous 3 years. At the same time, in a city that continues to have far more homicides than New York and Los Angeles, there continues to be eruptions of violence. And here are some items of news from around the state. In Champaign, no sentencing delay in slaying. A judge has denied a request to delay sentencing for a former University of Illinois student convicted in the kidnapping and murder of a visiting Chinese scholar. The Champaign News-Gazette reports U.S. District Judge James Shadid issued the ruling Wednesday. Jurors last week convicted Brent Christensen in the 2017 killing of 26-year-old Yingying Zhang. His sentencing begins Monday. Jurors will decide if he'll receive life in prison or the death penalty. Christensen's lawyers argued that prosecutors turned over a large amount of victim impact videos at the last minute. They said it would take weeks to translate the videos from Chinese to English. They asked the judge to either bar them or delay sentencing. The judge told prosecutors to give defense attorneys specific video clips they plan to use at sentencing. And here's an item from Geneva, Illinois. Police: man stole Samaritan's cars. A Chicago man is accused of stealing the vehicles of motorists who stopped to help him after he was involved in crashes. Calvin Taylor is charged with armed violence, hijacking, possession of a stolen vehicle, and unlawful use of a weapon charges. Authorities say the 26-year-old Taylor on Saturday used a gun to take a minivan from a motorist at a gas station. Taylor crashed the vehicle, and when a man from Sandwich stopped to help, Taylor jumped into the Good Samaritan Chevrolet and drove off. Minutes later, police responded to a rollover on Interstate 88 involving the stolen Chevrolet. There, police learned the alleged thief had stolen a Dodge Avenger from an 18-year-old Sycamore woman who stopped to help. He crashed that car in Bellwood during a police chase. Taylor, who suffered a broken leg and ankle, is being held in Kane County Jail in lieu of $500,000 bail. And another item from Kane County: Kane prosecutor won't run again. The Illinois State's attorney, who was special prosecutor in the case of a white Chicago police officer convicted of killing black teenager Laquan McDonald, says he won't seek re-election. Kane County State's attorney Joseph McMahon announced his decision not to run for a third term in the suburban Chicago County in a Tuesday letter. He didn't give a reason. McMahon has held the post since 2010. McMahon was tapped in 2016 to prosecute former Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke when Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez recused herself from the case. Van Dyke is serving a prison sentence after he was convicted of second-degree murder and aggravated battery. And here's a rather unappetizing item from Chicago. Rat meat seized at O'Hare Airport. Officials say U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport thwarted a man's attempt to import several pounds of African rat meat. Customs spokesman Steve Bansbach said Tuesday that the man declared the 32 pounds of meat on June 26th when his flight arrived from the Ivory Coast. The meat was confiscated and destroyed. Bansbach says the man did not face a fine and continued on his journey because he was forthcoming about what he was bringing into the country. He says customs officials prohibit the entry of African meats to prevent the spread of African swine fever. And here's another story about O'Hare, headlined, 2.1 million air travelers to pass through Chicago airports as drivers faced biggest July 4th weekend travel delays Friday. by Liam Ford. As more than 2 million people move through Chicago's airports over the 4th of July holiday weekend, drivers in the Chicago area were expected to join a record number of people on the road, with the worst delays in local traffic expected Friday afternoon, even as Wednesday sees the most roads congested, according to officials. City Aviation Department officials expect more than 2.1 million passengers to travel through the city's airports for the holiday. About 1.6 million passengers were expected at O'Hare International Airport, and nearly 490,000 were expected at Midway Airport, according to the department. The holiday travel period runs from Tuesday through Monday, July 8th. It's a 1.2% increase over last 4th of July. On the roads, the AAA Chicago Motor Club expects 2.36 million people to travel by car in Illinois for the weekend, up more than 4.5% from 2018, as about 41.4 million people travel by auto nationally. In most places, the worst traffic tie-ups were expected Wednesday, with delays making for travel times as much as four times as long as the normal commute, according to AAA. In Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, the most congested area was expected to be around Chicago, with the largest delays over a normal day on Friday between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m., according to AAA. Wednesday also was expected to be the worst overall day to travel, as most area expressways see above normal congestion. The delays Friday were expected to come from people returning to the city after the holiday, said Mark Burfind, a spokesman for INRIX, a company that does detailed traffic analysis for AAA. "It's predominantly a function of Chicago's geography," Burfind said in an email. "As people return to the city and suburbs on Friday for work or the extended weekend, there are limited alternatives to going around the city since the lake bounds it. Going through Chicago is the fastest route for drivers, despite extreme delays, since the inconvenience of going around Chicago is greater." Road projects in Illinois were scheduled to be suspended from 3 p.m. Wednesday until just before midnight Sunday, with many lanes that had been closed for construction open to traffic, according to the Illinois Department of Transportation. However, a number of lane closures in Chicago and elsewhere, including some related to the Jane Byrne Interchange project, will remain in place. Lower gas prices in much of the country are bringing drivers onto the roads. In Illinois, gas prices have jumped recently because of the doubling of the state gas tax from 19 to 38 cents a gallon, making up $1.03 of the $3.40 price of a gallon in Illinois in recent days. Nationally, gas is going for an average of $2.61 a gallon, according to AAA. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for July 4th. Please stay tuned.